Hey, it's time for the work show.
In 1841, the corduroy breeches I put on. The corduroy breeches I put on to work upon the railway, the railway. I'm weary of the railway, poor paddy works on the railway. 1842,
and I can put a motor crew, and we serve a job to do, working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging engines. I was working on the railway. 1843, I brought my shell across the knee, went to work for the company, the lease of Stanley Railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging engines. I was working on the railway.
1844, I landed on the Liverpool shore. My belly was empty, my hands were raw with working on the railway, the railway. I'm weary of the railway, poor paddy works on.
1845, and Daniel Connell lives alive. Daniel Connell lives alive, working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging engines. I was working on the railway. 1846, I changed the shape and carried bricks. Changed the shape and carried bricks, working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, dodging engines, dodging engines. I was working on the railway.
1847, poor Paddy was thinking of going to heaven. The old beggar was thinking of going to heaven to work upon the railway, the railway. I'm sick to my death of the railway.
I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging engines. I was working on the railway.
Hi, it's the Work Show, the March edition. This month we're taking a look at artists and the balancing of creativity, the making of money. Among those we spoke to this week were students from three of Eura Adams's classes at Columbia Green Community College.
I always thought I was going to be in advertising and a business executive because I wanted to be what my dad was. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And that I've had really obscure wants, you know, growing up as a child, like a volunteer firefighter. I always wanted to be a firefighter growing up versus a dancer. You know, I did ballet. But, like, when you're a kid, you think more on the unrealistic terms, I think. But I guess I wanted to follow my dad's footsteps.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to be a ballerina when I was little. Took dance for 5 years, and then I got my trophy, and I was like, okay, I'm done. First paid job was at Rite Aid, at a pharmacy. I was hating it.
My first job was lifeguarding at Bard. And at that point, I don't think I really had any idea what I was going to do. I was like 15. I was making money. Going to school, my parents were like, yeah, make money, go to school, get good grades. That was like the only focus I had at that point. I was interested in art, you know, but I wasn't planning on much. I just had my interests everywhere, so.
My first job was at a supermarket. I was a cashier, and I didn't know what I was going to be when I grew up, and I still don't.
Same here.
My first job was at a pizza place. The owner really liked me and he wanted to teach me how to make pizza. So I became like a pizza cook slash dishwasher kind of guy. And I didn't really care much about it. I just liked pizza, so that was cool because I got free pizza. I don't know, like I had a dream once when I was like 16 or 17 that like I was a massage therapist, so then I was like, yeah, I think I want to do that. And then I did, so I am. And
he had a dream.
Yeah. Boy, my first job, I was a dog sitter. And I always wanted to be a blacksmith for some reason. I don't know why. I still want to try it, though. I still have a passion for just to try to be a blacksmith.
You should go to a workshop.
I know. Yeah, I went on like a field trip in the third grade, and I saw this blacksmith, and I was like, I want to do that. I have no idea why, though. But anyway, now everything is totally different. I just want to have my little oasis of my, you know, gardens and stuff and be able to just live off my own land.
My first actual paying job, I worked for a farm picking vegetables and fruits for their large farm stand. I like that. I like to be outside. And when I was little, I was crazy about Margaret Mead and I wanted to be an anthropologist. Mm-hmm. And I'm still crazy about Margaret Mead, but...
Vincent Van Gogh, who loved color and who let it show. Now in the museum, what have we here? The baddest painter since God's Jan Vermeer. And he loved life so bad. His paintings had twice the color other painters had. So bad that the world had to know. The man loved color and he let it show. Well, in the Amsterdam Museum, I was feeling bad and trying to find a way not to be that sad. I felt the feeling in the room sincere, and Vincent Van Gogh, well, he seemed so near. And he loved life like he did. His paintings had the things that painters keep here. He loved life so bad that the world had to know. He loved color and he let it show. Okay, so what can we say about this Vincent Van Gogh, Ellie?
He loved color and he let it show.
Okay, Michael, now in the museum, what have we here?
The baddest painter since Jan Vermeer.
He loved life with that heart. His pairs took off with the other painters just thought. He loved life so bad that the world had to know. He loved color and he let it show. All right, have you heard about the painter Vincent Van Gogh, who loved color and who let it show? Now in the museum, what have we here? The baddest painter since God's Jan Vermeer. And he loved life with a passion. His parents said things are best, and Jerry, don't do it that fashion. He loved life so bad that the world had to know. The man loved life, folks, and he let it show. Vincent Van Gogh, who are we talking about? Vincent Van Gogh.
Has anybody actually made any money from their art yet?
Well, I sold some jewelry that I made for like $20.
How did it feel?
It felt good, but I mean, I didn't go too much farther after that because I'm not good at marketing, which is something I should probably get into.
I've made a little money. I make some boxes and I sold some boxes. They're actually in a store up in Glens Falls, but it didn't go anywhere.
I illustrated something for someone that was trying to start a business. I also got $20 for that, so I do little illustration. I mean, my mother pays me to do some stuff, too, so
My family's paid me a couple of times, so that's really about it.
I sold a comic to somebody once, but only for, like, $25.
So, how far are you all aiming to go with your art? Do you see it as a career or something?
I see it as something you can, like, apply to other fields of study. Like you could have this creative intellectual thought that you could apply to something else, like a different field, like even history or science.
I think I'll always do it as a hobby and it'll be a part of my life, but I'd much rather be surrounded by it after this. I'm going to school to become a curator, so I'll be surrounded by it all the time. but I won't necessarily be doing it. Being charged with all that.
I just do it for fun. I don't ever plan to make any money off of it. That's not even like my goal or anything.
I'd like an opportunity to make some sort of money off of it, so there could be a trade-off and work less in my chosen profession as a nurse or in my new profession as a massage therapist, to do less of that, to be able to have more time to take photographs and do things. And I've made money doing like taking pictures of casual weddings or people's children or some basics like that, but my skill level wasn't where it needed to be, and I'm working on that this semester.
I haven't made any money off of art yet either, but I don't know if I care if I do ever. I want to get into more media stuff, you know, like videography and things like that. But I'm more wanting to make a change with my art than.
I haven't made too much money off of my art so far. I mean, I've sold a couple of drawings to my friends for tattoos and things that they wanted to have done. But I would really like to go into like an illustration type of thing. So I would really love to just draw all the time.
I lifeguard. I work in the ceramic studio over there. I worked in records registration in that building. Like I walk dogs. I do like tons of stuff.
Yeah, I've been pretty all over the place too. I went from teaching skiing and tennis full year round to being a butcher in training to now I'm a cashier because of just the hours of school versus the amount of homework time and how much time I actually have to work.
I've been a counselor and I've done retail for about 7 or 8 years.
I work at a veterinary clinic.
I'm just doing this for fun, like, because it's like when I'm not working, I go to school because like, it's like fun and like I don't know. I just want to learn more about like art and stuff from like painting, but that's like really the extent of it.
I want to become better at what I do as a hobby. I mean, eventually, if I ever got the opportunity to do it full time, I would love to. But I mean, realistically, not many people get to do that. Not many people get to be original enough and really make it in the art world. So I tried to choose a career where I'd still be a part of it, but may not necessarily be making my own art and selling it and living that way.
Yeah, I agree with her. Like, choosing a profession that still deals with your creative side, but lets you make money so you don't starve at the same time.
Talking about me making my own art, but I think what it comes down to is I have a very hardworking, business-oriented family. My dad has worked from the ground up in the Navy and being in business his entire life, and a lot of his views were installed on me. So I don't think I could live such like a careless life as far as really trying to make a living just simply doing one thing.
Well, I know my dad's worked at the same place for the last 30 years, and I don't want to end up working at like a place like he's worked for my whole life. I'd rather be out there, you know, trying to find my way, even if it's stumbling from here to there, but I mean, at least it'll keep me excited and engaged and not sort of like stagnant.
I think that's true for all of us. Or you're an artist, you don't want to get stuck doing something that you're just mediocre
with. Staring at a screen all day.
Yeah.
I just get a headache.
Yeah.
I feel like the economy just goes full circle. So eventually, like, we're probably close to the bottom right now. I think at some point we'll have to start moving back up. I don't know how long that's going to be, because I study history and I see, like, these long chunks of time where people are in, like, a depression or they're struggling and there's some depression.
I feel like being in school, I can't be a pessimist about it. Like, I want to look forward to having a career, besides the fact that a lot of people that are graduating right now aren't afforded that opportunity. I still think the best for myself to give me a reason to stay here and do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't know, I've lived a lifetime probably more than all of them, and I think when I was their age I thought that the world was falling apart too, but it's still the world and everybody's still doing pretty much okay. Things shift and change, but you know, in 20 years from now you look back and say, oh, things were great 20 years ago and they're not so great now, so you know, you can't be gloom and doom. It's
I think the world moves in cycles, though, and if we don't do anything about what's happening, then it's just going to get worse. If we aren't aware of what's going on, and we try to change something, it's going to make it worse, whereas if we do something, I think we could lift ourselves up.
Entre meu, uma tentação do céu e desencanto, eis o que o céu me deu. Serei bem eu, sob este véu de pranto, sem saber se choro algum pecado. A tremer, imploro o céu fechado. Triste amor, o amor de alguém, quando outro amor se tem abandonado. E não me abandonei, por mim ninguém já se detém na estrada. Triste amor, o amor de alguém, quando outro amor se tem abandonado. E não me abandonei, por mim ninguém já se detém na estrada.
We spoke with Dawn Breeze at her home in Germantown. Dawn has worked as a stylist, as a fashion designer, as a personal chef, and she had her own shop on both 7th Street and Warren Street in Hudson for a while. She's been living in the area for 9 years, and we caught up with her as she was hanging out with her son, Sonny.
Well, I think there's a difference for me between realizing it and claiming it, like having the title, claiming that. So I would say I didn't start using the term that I was an artist until I was 27. So possibly even 28, I don't know exactly the date, but it was pretty late. And meanwhile, like, I had been doing my art my whole life, but I don't know, I had an aversion to it because I, like, only had so much education and I didn't go to art school, I didn't finish college or anything. And so my high school education in art was still traditional, and I didn't fit into that and I didn't like it. So I always had a lot of skills and talent artistically, but where it was going wasn't anything that I liked. And so when I thought of a painter, it was like oil painting a still life, which just bore me to death. And I wanted a much more like racy career than that, and I wanted to do things that were fun. So I was much more interested, and I liked fashion a lot, so I was more interested in fashion and photography. And that's where I started, like, my work in New York. It was in fashion and photography. And it wasn't until I moved upstate to Hudson that I started working, I would say, as an artist. And that happened, like, organically and almost by chance. And it was because what I think it was just the surrounding beauty and the openness and the light, and it just started filtering in, and I just started making work. And at first I wasn't even calling them paintings because they were mixed medium, like I was working with like photographs and wax, and I was pouring candles, and at that time I didn't even know there was such thing as encaustic. I just thought, like, what am I doing? This is so fun. And it was all really exploratory. And so I was doing that, and it was outside of myself that someone recognized it as art and as paintings. And then I sort of was like, what? and my I guess like my definition started to open up, and slowly and naturally I started to become what I am now and still becoming.
I painted a sign on the van for you, mister. I painted a sign pretty good. I painted a white horse or a fire-breathing dragon. I painted a sign. I've been around and I'm working this town. I tell the sun that the moon went down. The best kind of a woman I found, kind that will bring you up and won't let you down. Well, I painted a sign on the sign for you, mister. I painted a sign pretty good. And if you're in love, paint your initial heart and arrow. I paint you up there on a water tower. The sweetest thing that I ever did see was just the way that you looked at me. And then them eyes I fall ever see, and I can paint a picture, a sweet mercy. Well, I paint a design on the van for you, mister. I paint a design pretty good. I paint you a girl doing a dance with a big red balloon. I paint you a girl, no costume. Back when they had that old big earthquake, I paint the bridge and all cable break. I plead for mercy, cry for heaven's sake. And I can paint a picture, a jelly cake. Well, I paint a design on the side of the building. I paint a design.
Okay, so before I moved to New York in 1999, and I had moved to New York to transfer to Pratt Institute. So I went to Pratt, and I was a photography and fashion major sophomore year. And I got to Pratt, and I also moved to New York with Johnny with $1,000 and this dream that it was going to be fine, and we would find an apartment, and this was all going to work out. And our apartment was horrible and scary, and was near Pratt, but it was like where the gunshots were in our hallway, you know? Yeah, literally. And our apartment had been burnt out before us. So that's where we moved to, and I went to Pratt, and I actually was really... I was really disenchanted with Pratt, because in those two departments, they were really lacking tremendously, I guess I should say. Like, the photography darkroom didn't, you had to have, there's a shared timer, and, you know, I, as a major, I still didn't even have my own working space, and there was a lot of things that were missing, so I withdrew from Pratt, and at the same time that I withdrew from Pratt, I started working with Catherine Malandrino, who's a designer in New York City, and I was offered a job working directly with her as a designer in the showroom, which was what I was interested in doing anyways, in fashion, so I just went fully into fashion, and then my career with Catherine grew, and I became the general manager of her flagship store, and then, you can't really blow the whistle for me. And then I worked with her in the showroom developing designs, and that carried on for a couple years. And
guys, soup is ready!
Oh, good. You can have some. And then after Catherine, I left her to start working, doing styling. So I started working with Trace Magazine, which was also on Broome Street, and working with a stylist named Christine De La Seuss, and who I loved her work. And so I sort of was her assistant and also the fashion editor at Trace Magazine. And I worked there for about a year or so. And at the same time as that, I started doing photography and working as a photographer for models and doing a lot of like test photography and such. And then we basically got burnt toast on the New York cycle of life and all of this work, and we wanted to come upstate and have a larger space to live in, and I had dreams of opening up my own shop, and so that's what brought us upstate. And meanwhile, I had also started working. I would go to Martha's Vineyard in the summers, which is where I grew up, and I also start, and I think that, I don't remember what the split was between fashion and cooking, but I started to work cooking, and I had been doing, way back before I moved to New York City, I had always worked in restaurants, and I worked in the kitchen in restaurants, and I really liked cooking, so I did prep chef work and line cooking and like all kinds of cooking, and so I started doing catering work on Martha's Vineyard, and then that led to doing private chef work on the vineyard. And then that led to maintaining my private chef clients in Manhattan. So when we moved upstate, I was still working in the city a couple nights a week for clients cooking. And I also have a business of drop-off private chef catering, which I was also doing. So then I moved here. I still maintained that, which has been my financial backbone for 11 years now. I'm still doing it. And I opened my shop, but what happened was, as I was here longer, my art started to progress, and it started to, I started having shows, and then it started selling, and it became clear to me that, that's what I was, and that's what I always wanted to do. And once I was able to open up my definition of what art was, and what it looked like, and who I was, then I recognized myself as that. And then I made the decision to leave, to stop the store, because I couldn't maintain what I felt was like another creative out, like another creative expression, and still be inspired to do and take that energy for my own work. But meanwhile, I'm still working as a private chef. And when I first moved here, when Sunny was born, I worked in the house, and I used to have a studio on Warren Street. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah.
I had that before I had Sunny. And when you're talking about balancing, I had thought I would keep that going when I moved here and I had Sunny, but it was next to impossible. And the whole, like, romantic vision of having my son lying on the floor while I was in the studio was completely void. Like, not, it never worked out. So I gave that studio up, and then I worked in here. I had a room in there when he was a baby, and I had a babysitter come and rock him in the carriage. I kind of think of it now as is that it's almost like you turn on a faucet, you know, that hasn't been turned on for a while, and there's like a huge splurt, and then it like closes up, and then it comes out again. It's more erratic, my work, like as far as how much work gets done, and it's you know, as much as I want to develop systems to be regular, they're constantly being broken. So it's erratic. And you're right, like the time is smaller chunks. Yeah.
Any commentary on the whole idea of when one's art work?
Yeah, well, I think that I struggle with that all the time because I think we define our work by what brings us financially the paycheck often. And so that ends up being what takes precedence as far as time goes often. And I think that, like, I don't know, that's actually, that was having Sunny, like adding him to the mix of working for money, doing my artwork, and then now having a son, like, the priorities got all jumbled up, you know, with your work, because all of those are work. You know, child rearing, working to make money, and making artwork, which, you know, you hope eventually you'll be able to earn an income as well that is substantial, but it's, I don't know, I guess I can only just say it's really hard. Because you want to say, like, this is my work, but then all of a sudden, because you enjoy it, it becomes also, like, your free time, and also, like, what, you know, but I'm taking care of the kid, and you're working, but you're out there making paintings, which is fun work, and, you know, so I don't know, work is such a funny thing, because we kind of, like, have, at least maybe I should just say myself, I have a hard time allowing work to also be what I love to do the most, you know, and allowing it to be valuable without being paid a big check for it. And
has having Sunny and working at home and all of this changed the art?
I think it changed it a lot. But I also would say that at the same time I experienced having Sunny, I also lost my sister, which you probably know, and that also changed my work. Because all of a sudden, both of those experiences were so personal, and before that, my work was based a lot more in the impression of what I felt externally, like in the environment and everything, and all of a sudden, I had something that needed to be expressed from the inside out, and so my work took this personal turn. And it also needed to find other forms, because before that I was just painting, and but I paint really abstract and expressionistically or whatnot. So I felt like that what was happening also sort of needed narration a bit, and I didn't... So I ended up going outside of painting, which was exciting, and when people ask me, I don't have an elevator speech anymore as to like what I do for my work, and so I kind of would describe it as a process artist and working multidisciplinary. So the approach is still really similar in all of the forms, but I'm working in installation and sculpture and environmental work, video, performance, and painting. So what's the easiest thing, I think, when you look at my work is to look at a body of work, and instead of looking at it as what medium, but instead just looking at sort of a year or the thread of inquiry.
You're talking for 5 minutes, right?
I'm going to talk for a little longer than 5 minutes.
Like 1600?
Maybe. I would say that I was making a lot more with my work before I had Sunny. But that is also, I think, the content of the work and the way, like, I was making sellable paintings. So the market supported that. And I don't think I have found support yet for the kind of work I'm making now. But I actually think eventually I will, you know. It's just going to be probably a different way. Like, it's not going to be the individual who sees my installation in the field and buys it for their backyard. So it's just going to be different. And I don't know, and that too, like, because I think, okay, well, that means that I need to probably do more fiscal sponsorship and find, like, grants and opportunities, which is a whole nother form of work, you know, so trying to find time for that too. In between play dates and work and everything, so.
But is it all fueling each element and does it feel rich? Or exasperating?
It's both exasperating and rich. Like, I think that having a child has made me and is making me a much deeper and more authentic being, and that is going to be reflective and is reflective in my work and as it develops. And so I think my work will be more valuable in having had these experiences. And I also think that what I can give to my child as I'm going through this own exploration and self-exploration will also be really valuable.
When I quit my job, I spent 3 months in bed. Thought I'd take a fine art painting instead. Got myself a can of paint. 5 minutes work is gonna make me a saint. Baby, I'm a fine artist. And maybe I deserve to be kissed. My paintings are famous and they're worth lots of dough. Pretty girls all hang around my gallery show. I'm as good with my paintbrush as I am with my lips. Stick around, honey, learn some aesthetic tips. Baby, I'm a fine artist. And maybe I deserve to be kissed. Beaming on through. Tell him fine art is something he don't know. And he'll be the chump that blows you the dough. Baby, I'm a fine artist. And maybe I deserve to be kissed. First I was cowboy and then a guru priest. Any little thing that'll keep my palm grease. Wear a white leather suit and a bubble toed shoe. Got a $50,000 a year case of the blue. Baby, I'm a fine artist. And maybe I deserve to be kissed.
I first got to know Jim Crewson when he was working alongside my wife doing restorations at one of the antique stores on Warren Street in Hudson. Later, he painted our house. It was only when he was painting that I got to know that he has his own career as a bluegrass musician with several albums and major tours under his belt, and is also a well-respected illustrator and painter in his own right. Jim came over and caught us up on how he balances the different aspects of his complicated work life and keeps a kind of breezy attitude to all things in life. He also pulled out his guitar for us.
You can edit this, right?
Yeah. Little bits.
The first band that I was in, my hardcore band, I was trying to think of work songs, you know, and we were called Quasimodo and the Eunuchs, and we did just regular hardcore punk, suburban hardcore punk rock, but then we had an a cappella tune, and it went, work, that's all you ever do. Like Yeah. Well, this one. And this isn't. Oh, this isn't new. It's old. I gotta start writing some new songs. I was hitching through Georgia one evening last June. Took a ride from a trucker by the light of the moon. As I stared out the window, I felt a hand on my knee. Said, go right ahead, man, cause this one's on me. This one's on me. Out with some hippies down near Baton Rouge. Just then I remembered that joint in my shoe. We passed it and we puffed it till we knew we couldn't see. But before I passed out, I said, this one's on me. Oh, this one's on me. It's the least I can do. Cause my baby don't want me and I'm feeling so blue. But I surely am grateful for your time. Shoulder by the shade of a tree. She said, pour out your soul, boy, cause this one's on me. Oh, this one's on me, it's the least I can do. Set on down and empty that sand from your shoe. Ain't it hard when a broken heart won't let you be? So set yourself down now, cause this one's on me. Set yourself down. Lately I've been doing a lot of commercial art, album covers and that kind of thing, illustration, and I've done some fine art, had some shows, and I paint houses when I'm not doing that to make extra money, and I restore antiques in Hudson every once in a while.
And you play music too, right?
And I play music, yeah.
And does the music pay as well, or?
When you play a wedding, it does.
Okay. So, all of this, I guess, does it all add up to a real living, or is it a constant scramble?
Oh, it's always a scramble, but it ends up working out, you know? I mean, as soon as you start feeling things start feeling the pressure, things end up working out. If you don't stress about it too much and let things flow and let things come to you.
How long did it take to learn not to stress about it?
I don't know. I've never stressed out about money. I don't like money very much, you know. It doesn't make me very happy, usually, unless I buy something like this guitar.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite quotes is from Gilligan's Island, Mrs. Howe. Anybody who says money can't buy happiness doesn't know where to shop.
That's perfect.
Yeah. I don't know. I always thought of getting money as, you know, they need to pay the bills and if I want to buy something good. And that's probably a naive way to look at things, but I don't know. I never thought of, you know, when I think of work, I just think of things that I enjoy doing that'll make me money. No, I was an art kid. You know, I'd be, ever since I was a little kid, I was drawing. And the other kids were out playing or something, I'd be laying on the floor drawing pictures. You know, my mom would always say, it's a beautiful day, go outside. But I'd be sitting, you know, sitting inside drawing pictures. So,
and then did the music pick up off of that? Or?
No, I didn't get into music until my last year of high school, and I was in a punk rock band. You know, I made these friends, and they said, we need somebody to scream. So I started screaming, and I discovered I have a really naturally really loud voice, and it just, you know, I ended up slowly calming down and translating that into bluegrass. I really got into bluegrass music. So I started a bluegrass band. Been in a ton of bands, though. You know, mm-hmm. Lots of punk rock bands, and, you know, you name it. You know, people don't get the connection a lot of times, but it's real similar in that it's just a few chords and it's super direct, you know. It's not real enigmatic music, you know. You instantly get it. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I went to Tyler School of Art in Elkins Park, PA for a year. Dropped out and bummed around. I ended up, strangely enough, working at an X-rated bakery. And from there, I started working at other X-rated bakeries, and I moved out, you know, I moved out to California, and I, from coast to coast, I was an X-rated baker. Then I moved to New York City and started Master Baker's X-rated cakes. So that's how I ended up making my living.
And that was your own business?
Yeah, myself and Tammy Resch, who was co-owner of Old Devil Moon. Making pies, you know, I moved to the city and was looking at bakeries because I had a lot of bakery experience, just regular bakeries. And I started making pies and cakes at the Old Devil Moon restaurant. And then I said, well, why don't we do this? You know, there wasn't an X-rated bakery in the city at the time, so we just decided to go for it. And it took off. You know, I made this movie on video with stuffed animals when I was living in San Francisco. And I just, you know, when I make art, I just make it with a couple people in mind who I want to impress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody fancy, just, you know, friends of mine who I really like. And some art people saw it and they said that it was art. So I thought, well, I could be an artist, you know? So I started doing paintings and more videos and that kind of thing. And the music kind of tied into that, you know? Like, I did a video with a live acoustic soundtrack at the Knitting Factory once. So, yeah, everything kind of tied together. I was going to move to the city, but I really hate living in the city, in New York City. And I was at a party, and a friend said that her aunt had a cabin in Hillsdale that was vacant. And they built it in the 50s, and it was a vacation cabin, and it was just sitting there, and it was full of junk, you know, and rotted taxidermy on the walls and stuff, and I just thought it was perfect. So I said, let me rent it for $300 a month, and it was on the side of a hill. No electricity, no running water, you mm-hmm. know, but a beautiful, beautiful one-room cabin with a big stone fireplace. So I moved in there and fixed it up, and then, you know, by this time, I was playing with my bluegrass band full time.
Were you still doing the baking, or?
That kind of petered off. No, I actually left Master Baker's to do Jim and Jenny and the Pine Tops, my bluegrass band, full time.
Okay.
And we were getting gigs, and we were touring. We did the tours with Nico Case and, you know, all around the United States and Canada and over to Europe and stuff. So, yeah, I was living in this cabin with no heat or running water or electricity and playing bluegrass at that point.
And painting.
Painting as well. Okay. But the art kind of took a back seat to the music at that point.
And how long did that last? Was that...
That lasted... How long did that last? It was 2005, I think, when that ended. And I moved to Hudson because the cabin was real leaky and needed a bunch of money. It was only a three-season cabin, if that, and needed a bunch of money dumped into it. You know, I came back from tour. We were touring England, and it was coming back, and it was wintertime. And I was, you know, there's snow all over the place, and the cabin leaked, and there was water coming through the ceiling, and I was just like, man, I got to get out of here. Can't take it anymore. So I moved to Hudson, and then I moved to Catskill. You know, I'm not going to say I like being poor. I just like living real simply, you know. You know, I'm thinking about buying a house now, but other than that, I'm just avoiding growing up, I think, in a way. You know, just keep it real simple, and that way you can make art and, you know, and keep a steady stream of income. But the house painting thing I'm trying to phase out because it's a pain in the butt. I don't want to be, you know, 65 and painting houses.
How many houses do you paint?
A lot.
Inside and out.
Inside and out. Yeah, we could do a walking tour of Hudson. I can just point out, you know, all that houses that I painted.
And do the people who hire you to paint the houses realize everything else you do? Does that come into it?
Usually not, you know. So I keep to myself. Mm-hmm. But, and the house painter is kind of the help, which I like, you know. Because I think house painters are notoriously kind of screwed up and have problems.
So that gives you latitude.
Right, yeah. It's like I used to love being a dishwasher when I was younger, you know, because nobody assumes that the dishwasher is smart or interesting. They just leave you alone and you wash dishes all night, which I loved. Because then your mind is freed up. You know, your hands might be being paid, you know, what, $10 an hour to wash dishes all night, but your mind can go wherever you want it to. Yeah, I mean, I used to write songs at work painting houses because, you, once again, it's a real zen kind of a thing. I recommend painting houses to anybody because it's very calming once you've got it going on. You know, once you get in the groove, your mind can... I don't want to say to people, any potential clients that my mind is wandering while I'm painting their house, but, you know, if you know what you're doing and you're concentrating on it, you can kind of be creative while you're doing it. I could write a whole song while I'm painting a house and just, you know, jot it down at the end of the day. One of my worst memories is my dad sitting at the kitchen table, and my dad saying to me, Jim, life is work. The sooner you realize that, the better off you'll be. And that was the most depressing thing I'd ever, you know, I was 14. The most depressing thing I'd ever heard in my life. So whenever people talk about art, you know, I'm going to go into my studio and work. I think, no, you're not. You're going to go play, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why I love the term playing music, because it's play. It's, you know, it's...
Do you see this reflect? I mean, when you enter into the art world, or as... At the art fair at Basilica last summer, the art world suddenly comes to you, and you've painted the space, literally, right, as well as being right, you know, an artist in it. And you got pretty good notices out of the whole thing.
Right.
Does it feel odd dealing with that? Is there a sense of pretension in the art world, or can you deal with that just as easily?
No, I can't deal with that at all. That's why I haven't, you know, since the Basilica show, I haven't really dealt in the world of fine arts. I feel more comfortable in commercial art, you know? Like, it's weird. I just did a high-profile album cover for a band that's on Sony, you know? And when you're an artist, everybody treats you real special. Or if you're in a band and you're touring, everybody treats you real special. When we used to tour with Nico, everybody would, you know, what kind of beer do you want in your dressing room? but when you're doing commercial art, you're the help, which, again, I'm kind of more comfortable in that role.
And then how do you handle, just on the other side of life, things like insurance and taxes and all the kind of background stuff of life that gets all mixed up in the idea of work, you know, the funky stuff of life.
You just gotta figure it all out, you know, like, my insurance is just real basic hospital insurance, you know, emergency room, something terrible happens, I'm covered, you know, and real cheap car insurance, and, you know, just live as simply as you can and keep the bills as small as you can. But I don't have a family, you know, I don't have to worry about all that extra. There's not a lot of nonsense in my life. I kind of try and shave it all down. I got one of those phones, you know, that from Walmart that are, you know, it's like a pay-as-you-go thing. Because that's the cheapest, simplest, no contract, you know.
So that's become, that is your life, the no contract.
Right, yeah, sure. Because that frees you up, and I don't try and force it to come together. Just if that's what happens, that's what happens, you know. But, that show I did in London, they really wanted me to play banjo. They said, bring your banjo along. And I did a freeze fair in London. They said, bring your banjo, you're going to play banjo. And that was kind of the art, you know, that's why I was there. I was there to pick a banjo at the freeze fair, which was really strange. And Duran Duran were walking around, which was great, you know. I was a big Duran Duran fan when I was a kid. So I wanted them to sign my banjo, but they didn't happen, yeah.
Music for this month's work show was by The Pogues doing Poor Patty on the Railway in honor of St. Patrick's Day. We heard from Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers doing Vincent van Gogh. We heard from Amália Rodrigues, the great Portuguese fado singer, doing Solidão from the 1950s. We heard from Michael Hurley singing his great song, I Paint a Design. We heard from R. Crumb and his Cheap Suit Serenaders doing the Fine Artiste Blues. And finally, we heard from the Ghana Postal Workers doing Work Music, an ethnographic recording of actual postal workers stamping envelopes in a post office in Ghana. Next month, we'll be taking a look at taxes and work. We look forward to hearing from you. My name is Paul Smart, and keep on working.